This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
From today's wonderful sprint, we've learned, of course, that there's an enormous amount to talk about regarding Darwin. And to summarise at the moment would be too difficult, but I'll just mention a few things. One of them being Colin Groves, of course, is quite wrong about human history, because in 1979 I broadcast a programme which featured the fossil beer can, which is in fact found on the Yass Road towards Mungo, just outside Canberra. And we discovered through the fossil beer can, which was several thousand years old, that Homo micturans had in fact fallen over and given rise to the apes. And as he walked backwards north, and in that way got to Flores, had a bit of a party. Some of them stayed behind because they didn't get up in time to move on and go to Georgia, in fact, where they perambulated around, eventually ending up in Africa. They're walking backwards, so people got confused about the direction of how people went. And the odd thing is that when we broadcast that, most of our hoaxes turn out to have been correct. Someone mentioned upstairs, I did a program on the ABC with someone called Wayne King, say it slowly, who was the new head of radio, who said that programs had to be shrunk and you get rid of science and you get rid of religion. Within 6 months of my doing that broadcast, Jonathan Shire was appointed head of the ABC. So I mentioned these things with a certain amount of reserve and deep worry, but I think Colin understands being corrected about these things, as he demonstrated with his last answer. The field is just extraordinary. In the science show this week, which you can't wait to hear, I have, of course, the Svante Paabo announcement of the Neanderthal genome, which I think you would have heard about already and which is featured in this week's journal, The Economist. The interesting thing about the Neanderthal genome, of which they have 63%, which is an amazing achievement, is that you can, of course, home in on bits of the barcode that match our own. And so you can see whether lactose intolerance came or went at a certain point. And you can also see whether the capacity for language is there, and in the case of Neanderthal, it indeed was. So even as of last week, we have confirmation of some of Darwin's ideas relating to human history. When it comes to what Darwin said about races and what Tony Barter reminded us of, in fact, we had an Occam's Razor broadcast by him on some of these ideas. It's, of course, disturbing, and it shows you how people like even Darwin and sometimes journalists get up on the stage and kind of go a pundit step too far beyond their possible expertise. And Darwin was, of course, talking about what were the essential prejudices of his day. In the time that he talked about the brain potentials of women and Negroids, suggesting that they wouldn't be as great as the white Europeans. He had no evidence for that. You could test it quite quickly, and Stephen Jay Gould wrote a wonderful book called The Myth's Measure of Man, in which it was scotched. However, I will say in Darwin's defence, and the reason that I put a few quotes in my bit of the museum book, talking about slavery, he was totally outspoken. Now, if you could imagine that on the Beagle, there is this 22-year-old. Look at a 22-year-old in the next 24 hours. They are incredibly young. I find 45-year-olds young. Not that there are any here today, but 22, and when he finished his voyage, he was 27. And yet there he was with Fitzroy, who was only slightly older, the captain, arguing about slavery. I have a quotation from Darwin's diary about that very fact. And he was absolutely against slavery because he was so concerned about the human lot, a characteristic indeed of his family and the Wedgwoods being enlightened people of an enlightened age mainly. And the sort of thing that he wrote about, slavery, has indeed been interpreted by a couple of people writing a book, one of the Darwin books, suggesting his whole approach to what he did about evolution and human beings was in fact inspired by his family's anti-slavery point of view. Religion, of course, arises, and the worry I have about some things that are written, and Tom Frame's book mentioned this, is one of the reasons they ask why we get cross about religion is when it's suggested that science is being put up as an alternative religion. I mean, this is nonsense. I don't know anyone who's suggesting that our lot of arguments on the natural way is there to replace any kind of religion. But if you do look at intelligent design and you look at the wedge document, which I quoted at length in my book, Unintelligent Design, there they actually say that their intention from the Discovery Center, which is the main center for promoting intelligent design, is to replace materialistic science. They say so several times. And indeed, Judge Jones, in his summing up of the Dover case, pointed out some of this stuff and pointed out some of the lies, his words, that were told by the witnesses, even about some of the science that they presented about irreducible complexity. Well, of course, complexity has been shown to have progenitors again and again, 40 times with regard to the eye, many times with regard to the flagellum. And so a certain amount of honesty rather than the kind of twisting would be good in such a debate. But from certain sources, only from certain sources in this argument does it come in the kind of mendacious way I describe. But just to do a tight segue, it's also this accusation that we're on some sort of religious trip that comes from people who are critical of global warming. You know, they say the environmentalists are just trying to put up an alternative religion. Michael Crichton said that. Freeman Dyson said that in not very convincing way. Well, I think that this is quite nonsense, and it's rather annoying. One of the things that I found rather startling, in fact, in Tom Frame's book, where he says of some of the people who disappointed him in his examination of Darwin and some of the history and some of the arguments, was indeed the theologians. We haven't been in this way disappointed today, but I must say that I have in the past been similarly so. Well, there are questions about design, I'll admit, and anyone who has a prostate or has given birth would really wish that God would get it right. And I think it's best to keep design away from a divine inspiration and see more of a kind of fudge job, which quite often is what nature often is trying to do. There are lots of books on Darwin and some of the related fields. We've been blessed with a few mentions today. Frank and Jan Nicholas's book on Darwin and Australia is a sheer delight. It was first written in about 1989 and a new edition brought out just a few months ago. And it is superb. And you can see some of the pictures that you saw this morning. One by this museum, you've heard about. Tom Frame's book, which I've enjoyed. Darwin's Armada by Ian McCallum, which explores some of the ways in which the Pacific has been extended in terms of ideas in recent times, and Steve Jones, who's a kind of honorary Australian because he's Welsh. I'm Welsh. As you know, Wales is the original sort of archetypal, non-GM human. Everyone else is a foreigner, but all Welshmen belong everywhere, and Welsh women. And Steve Jones, who was here only a few weeks ago, has written this marvellous book on Darwin's Island, and I highly recommend it. So where does that leave us? I'm concerned about the question of God, which I return to in the Science Show next week. This week is Neanderthal. Next week is how you get something from nothing. Alan Guth talks about how in the beginning the universe may have been technically, and this is a bad word, completely empty. And there was a quantum fluctuation from which you got a gram, and as a result of that, you've got inflation, which produced the universe. So the worry is that God may be a quantum fluctuation, but probably isn't in the terms that we heard this morning. In terms of our own future, this is a more serious matter. If you look at the ways in which human beings have developed, I had two sons of great-great-grandsons of Darwin on the program 2 weeks ago, Chris Darwin and the aforementioned Matthew Chapman. That's just five generations back. If you look at the human history going back to civilization 10,000 years ago, that's only 400 generations. Imagine 400 human beings holding hands going back way to the time that agriculture and cities were invented. That's a very, very short time. We've been around for only about 150,000 years. And given the concerns we've got, which we heard about at the end, with all the environmental challenges, not least global warming, it's one of our great hopes that Homo turns out to be as sapient as he and she might be, given half a chance. A lot to think about. A terrific guy. Congratulations to the museum. Thank you very much indeed.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.